Welcome to Day Zero Update for November 16th, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Jenna Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a big week of news as we had a PlayStation State of Play focused on Japanese stuff. We had a number of other news, including, let's say, some more Rockstar Games news.
Yep.
Of the bad kind. Ubisoft news of the not great kind, as well as a number of other things going on. And yeah, that'll be neat to see. So yeah, we'll get to what we've been playing here. And I'll kick it off as I've been playing more Power Wash Simulator 2. Been enjoying that a lot. I just did a new job in the carnival area, and it was a really fun space to explore. Way more fun than the actual real world counterpart of it would be, because, you know, this is a game and they can have a bunch of fancy stuff in it versus what you would find at most carnivals, which is like the bare minimum. But yeah, I've got that. And I just got the other highest tier washer, as I'm working towards getting the dual nozzle thing, the dual turbo nozzle attachment for it. I do have the one that has the tri-tip nozzle, which is great. Helps out a lot. And yeah, you kind of get it a little bit sooner than you might have in the first game. But yeah, been enjoying using that. And got a handful more jobs to go, from what I recall. So hopefully should have it done by the weekend, next weekend. We'll see. I also got Luminous Arise, since that is out this week. Been playing some of that, and that is a really cool package. It's very much what if you did for Tetris. If you take that Tetris Effect style package and do it for Luminous, and you kind of get the basic gist here. Very much you got your Luminous skins, but instead of being contained in the play field, it is all around on the screen. I think here they have more aggressive, like, visual stuff going on in Tetris Effect Dead, especially things that have the screen, like, zooming in and out and kind of tilting the screen and all that kind of stuff. There are options for turning that off. So some of it kind of is a little jarring when you're trying to focus on the play field, and it's making it a little bit harder to focus on the action, that kind of stuff. But they do have a bunch of unlockable stuff here. You kind of earn in these points that you essentially just spend on, like, a random random feed thing that'll just pop out a random item for your play card or whatever banner, all that stuff, for the multiplayer stuff. And yeah, the multiplayer seems to have some leaderboard chasing stuff as well as some direct multiplayer stuff in there. Nothing really too complicated from what I've seen so far. And like the other Luminous games has challenges, a lot of which are set up as like tutorial stuff for teaching you some of the basics and some of the more advanced stuff. But then they also have a section for the more challenging stuff. It has some neat ideas in there, especially things like there is one where you're trying to get, you know, 200 squares matched. And in the process of how long it takes you, it'll make the amount of whatever the squares you're putting down bigger. It goes from like a basic 2x2 square to like 2x3 to like 3x3, up to like 4x3 or 4x4 stuff, much bigger, which almost got into like a very weird space, like, oh, this is just very ridiculous, what's going on. don't have to give a shit about where you're putting it because you're gonna fill up a bunch of the board for you, and that kind of stuff. And I got some of the nice little twists there. Yeah, if you beat the campaign, you get the survival mode, which is, you know, just playing through all the skins and seeing how far you can get. They do change the campaign's look from Tetris Effect, which kind of had that wormy kind of look to it, where it's just this big, curvy line that's had your various stages here. It's just like, here's, you know, seven sets of skins kind of thing that you're kind of playing through, you know, a few at a time. And it'll tell you, you know, leaderboard score type stuff for how well you did there. But yeah, you're kind of working your way through that so that you can just play the survival mode or some of the other stuff. There's a playlist mode, so if you want to play certain skins, you can do it there. And yeah, it's got a lot of stuff to it. It's really well done, really fun, and yeah, definitely worth checking out if you like your Luminas. Maybe the one issue I saw is I kind of wish you could, like Tetris Effect, you had the ability to kind of frame the screen how you want, bring the play field kind of to a more full screen look, or you could leave it zoomed out. Here it just seems to stay at one set framing. There seems to be no real way to alter that. It's all options for just turning off the random zoom and tilting stuff and all that, as far as I could see, but maybe that'll get added at some point. But for now, that's a very good puzzle game. Really liking jumping in for a little bit here and there to enjoy it. And yeah, that's been fun. The other game I've been playing is Ball Pit. I've been playing a bunch of that. I've got like 15 hours in it now, as I'm unlocking new stages and all that. And it's kind of just throwing out a bunch of weird little things to it, as you're kind of filling out your little town area. The buildings you can build, and you know, you have to hit them with the harvesting mechanic to build them and kind of activate the stuff that comes with it, and particularly add some really interesting ones, like the ability to use two characters for a run. You kind of combine their abilities together in a way that's really interesting and kind of makes the game a bit easier depending on how you're combining them together. Obviously, some combos maybe don't work super well, as I tried out some of the wackier ones the first time I tried it, which I think was with the guy who shoots out all his balls in the back, the top part of the field, instead of the bottom. And then I think the other character had, I think the ghost ball, which broke through, you know, goes through all the other balls, but does all the enemies and does damage on the way. And this was kind of just a very limiting combo. So that one didn't work out, but I've done a few others and have tried to look up the abilities that they have and what combos work together for the evolution stuff, and kind of find good combos there. And that seems to be a good way of making sure you have more fruitful runs. And yeah, it kind of really adds a lot. And maybe the one issue I have is the ability to kind of see what combos work together well is not really surfaced very well in this game, versus like the way Vampire Survivors does it, where you just have this big chart of all the combos. The way it has it is it lists all the ability balls and just kind of makes you scroll down a good bit to find the ones that are combos. On the individual balls themselves, you can scroll down with the right stick on the like little page of information it has. And it'll show you the evolutions all the way down at the bottom of that. But it's not surfaced very well. And it's like, this probably needs a different part of the menus to make this easier to see. Versus going to, you know, like a guide or something that'll have all that stuff listed pretty easily. But it does tell you, like, hey, there's one more combo with this item. So you might want to search around for what might go well with that kind of stuff. And yeah, kind of makes it a nice way to kind of play around with these different combos and such. So I usually try to get the two characters that will combo together pretty well. And that has worked out for what I'm doing here. So yeah, not really too much else to add there, but that is a game I definitely recommend people checking out if you want a very weird game and its core concepts. But once you kind of get going and start getting successful runs, it kind of gets easier from there, because you're getting buildings that will boost stats and you're kind of making these characters more powerful no matter which ones you pick. And it kind of changes from a game where you're just trying to get successful runs to you're trying to fill out your encyclopedia and build out the town, have all the web, you know, the buildings and such done, and kind of just trying to do everything in the game, which is easier said than done. But at a certain point, you feel like you got a good amount of momentum to it that feels nice. So yeah, that's what I've been playing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I am also still playing Power Wash Simulator 2. I'm currently still working on the roller disco. That's like, it's in this particular game, it's like the first one where it's like where the entire job is like all interior. So you're basically cleaning the interior of this, basically this discotheque. And to be completely fair, as far as like both this game and the previous goes, these types of jobs are my least favorite, because there's so much time wasted on having to clean like the ceiling and everything. And it's just it can be a pain in the ass. But I'm just about finished with it, so I can move on to the next job, which I'm pretty sure is cleaning like this farm tractor. But I, you know, it's still fun. It's still enjoyable. It's just, these are my least favorite kind of jobs, and I kind of have to struggle through them. And the other game I've been playing, is Dispatch, which is a, frankly, very enjoyable sort of telltale-like, adventure game where you are playing a legacy superhero who has lost his, you know, robot suit that he uses to fight crime. And so he's basically he more or less has to retire temporarily from being a hero until he can, you know, get the funds to repair the thing. And in fact, he pretty much states, is like, yeah, I pretty much like blew through my inheritance and a bunch of other like life savings and stuff trying to keep this thing maintained, and I've basically been keeping it together with duct tape and prayers for the last few years. And basically he ends up getting meeting up with this other superhero named the Blonde Blazer, who essentially recommends him to join up with her company, which is called the SDN, the Superhero Dispatch Network, which is like a subscription service where you work as a you dispatch various heroes to various various subscribers to whatever their needs are. And it can be anything from like, you know, helping a cat out of a tree to, you know, straight up fighting a giant kaiju somewhere in the middle of the city, because, you know, that happens sometimes. The only problem is that the ones he ends up getting is the Z team, which is literally the lowest ranking members in the group. Specifically, they're also members of what's called the Phoenix Program, which is where a bunch of former, you know, small-time supervillains try to essentially redeem themselves. But again, he has the lowest ranking group, and so he's basically having to deal with all these frankly, some of them very obnoxious and just plain don't respect them. And like the game, a lot of the game is very much like what you would see with a Telltale game where, you know, you're choosing like what thing to say during conversation or what action you're going to take. And there are like the odd quick time events. But a lot of the actual, like the bulk of the gameplay is during the dispatch segments where you are in front of your computer in the office and you are picking up calls and then dispatching members of your team to do whatever needs to be done. And they can be anywhere from like, you know, sending one person to where you can send up to four. And they, all of the individuals that you have in your team, all of them obviously have like their own strengths and weaknesses. But at the same time, when it comes to like jobs where you have to like send out more than one people, they will often have various status effects that they will put on the team as a whole. That could be anything from like, you know, increasing strength or like having the ability to heal anyone who's injured. You know, stuff like that. And honestly, I can totally understand why, you know, some people might not gravitate to this game immediately. As far as I'm concerned, it drew me in pretty quickly. As soon as, like, you know, the first episode was over, I was pretty much like, yep, I'm in this for the long haul now. And it's served me well, pretty good so far. Because, you know, weirdly enough, all of these individuals who work for you are very obnoxious, but they are very well-rounded characters, and you do grow to like them. And I think part of the reason it succeeds is because, and I kind of go, I think this is in reference to, I think was the review that was written for this on Game Informer, which I agree with, which is a lot of games are really into trying to like get the language of cinema and everything. But what this game did is it decided to go with like the language of prestige television, which is kind of why it works better, because like it has like the big stuff involved. You know, like there are like the big battles and stuff, but most of it is just, you know, very grounded sort of, you know, office hijinks, except, you know, the office is filled with, you know, a bunch of super people. And yeah, I'm definitely enjoying it and find it very gripping. Just, you know, and honestly, you know, there is like some replay value here because I am intending on going back and seeing like some different choices I could make. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So Darren, what about you?
Yeah, I've been playing the same game. There is something else I've been playing, but I can't talk about it. So I'll just go ahead and talk a little bit more about Dispatch. I've been playing this since it came out. So I've pretty much like, you know, been playing the two episodes and continuing to play as they release every week. Without saying much, the last episode is significantly longer than the rest of them. So, you know, if you're going to pop in for 2 hours, you might want to just make sure you have some more time there. But yeah, anyway, my review on the game went up on Wednesday or Thursday, and I have the lowest review on OpenCritic right now. That being said, I don't not like this game. I enjoyed it very much. The reason why it didn't you know, score as highly for me is because of reasons that Brandon explained. I did not care for the dispatching all that much. And I also don't like the hacking. And the hacking was what really made it really upsetting for me. Just to go a little bit more into the dispatching stuff. When you first start, and if you're not giving the game your total focus, you're pretty much just trying to put whatever hero into whatever situation is there. And I was not paying too much attention to their attributes, even though I was understanding that I can level them up as I go. And I just kept using the wrong hero for the wrong situation. And on top of that, there are some situations that are going to be rigged. You know, without saying too much, something happens in episode 3 that really brings the entire morale down. And you can go ahead and be totally focused and send one hero to one situation, but all of a sudden someone will just go there for them, and then not only will they go there for them, they end up failing the mission. And that really like bogs things down. But at the same time, you can really appreciate it because that was done narratively in order to continue the story. Like as Brandon mentioned, you're working with the Z team, and most of them are pretty much former villains. And what happens here is because they're villains, they're going to be assholes. They don't know who you are. For the most part, they don't know that you're Mecha Man or and that they should give you any respect. So you pretty much have to earn it in various ways. And sometimes you do have to like send people on certain missions that they don't want to go on. And at the same time, that's also what's going to allow you to really appreciate everybody more. And that's what I'm doing now. I'm actually playing it a second time. I'm having my girlfriend make all the decisions, and then I do like the hacking for her and stuff like that. So going into the hacking, it is very similar to like what you see in a game like BioShock, where you know they're all dot games, and you have to go from the beginning to the end, and they do a good job showing you how to play. But eventually you reach the point where there are antiviruses, where think of like Pac-Man and they're chasing you. The problem is you have a linear path, and so do they, and they are also much faster than you. So there is a point in the game where I end up just constantly failing. And yes, you can turn off the failure part, but the problem is like if you keep doing it again and again and again and you constantly fail, it just doesn't feel as fun. And then moving into the main point that really made Dispatch just like, you know, that had me not as high as everybody else is to me, I felt like almost every big decision in the game didn't require all that much thought. There's like one big decision that ends up affecting your romance. There's one big decision that ends up affecting you know, the team in general, and so on and so forth. And I pretty much always knew what I was gonna do, and there really hasn't been much of a want or need for me to actually see what happens. And that being said, like I'm used to decisions in things like Walking Dead, where you know I have to decide who dies, or in Life is Strange, where I have to decide whether you know this person's feelings matter to an extent. And the same thing happens in Dispatch, but it just didn't feel as important. I don't know if it's because like I've you know pretty much know what to expect from the superhero aspect of it all, but that's really the main thing that bogged it down. But anyway, you know. Going from last week to this week, I do think the game and the story in general stuck the landing. I am very satisfied with the way it ended. There's something happens at the end of episode 6 that really grips you as you go into 7 and 8. And yeah, they just do a really good job leading up to the ultimate decision at the very end. And yeah, at the end of the day, even though I have my issues with like the decisions and some of the gameplay aspects, I do think this is one of Telltale, or not Telltale, but this is one of the best stories you see in this genre. And that's really impressive in its own right because, you know, there is a such thing as superhero fatigue. You know, the episodic nature of games is something that's been really, really tired, but Ad Hoc really succeeded because they really, made sure that everything came out on time, and that is an accomplishment in its own right, because both the old Telltale and Don't Nod really like failed in that regard. So it's an example of a game that's really learned about all the problems from it, or learned from all the problems in its genre, and really made it great to an extent where nothing feels like a waste of time. And that's the one thing that I really appreciate the most. These also are not walking simulators. You know, Walking
Nope.
Dead and Why Life is Strange had walking. There's no walking here at all. You may or may not like the QTEs as you watch the entire story unfold, but you can also turn those off, and there is no trophy tied to those, so that's the main thing. But if you do want to 100% the game, you do have to go ahead and play the game again, making decisions you didn't make before. Luckily, like every previous game to it, you can actually choose specific scenes, so you don't have to go too far back. But yeah, I really like the game. Again, I gave it a 3.5 out of 5, a 7, as some people will call it, and a 7 is good. Okay, so let's keep that in mind. And yeah, that's all I got.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. First up here, we've got new additions for PlayStation Plus. For extra and premium tiers. And the first up here, this is spoiling a little bit of another story here, but they've got Red Dead Redemption for the PS5 and PS4. As they're finally doing a remaster of this game for the new consoles. That includes both Red Dead Redemption and Undead Nightmare. That'll be available here on, let's see, I guess on Tuesday. I guess you're getting the PS4 version now. Then PS5 will be on December 2nd when the rest of that stuff comes. So there's that. You want to check that out?
Yeah.
People are still waiting on Red Dead Redemption 2 to get an upgrade for PS5 and Xbox Series X and S. Which, I don't know. It seems like it should have happened, but especially now that they're delaying GTA 6. But yeah, speaking of that, they're also putting GTA 5 on PS Plus for PS5 and PS4, so you can check that out while you continue to wait another year for Grand Theft Auto 6, so there you go. For PS5, Pacific Drive, which is a very fun first-person driving survival game, roguelike kind of thing. Here, as you are taking care of your car, it's like a big station wagon kind of car, repairing its panels and wheels and all that kind of stuff to explore the dangerous part of this Pacific Northwest area, with a lot of spooky stuff and weird anomalies happening. That's one I definitely recommend checking out if you want something really interesting and kind of a really nice kind of analog feel to the way that the car moves.
But be prepared to, be repairing that thing a lot because it is surprisingly flimsy.
So there's that. Also for PS5, Still Wakes the Deep, the new game from Chinese Room from last year, who made a pretty interesting first-person narrative horror game. Where you're on this oil rig where, let's say, some Cthulhu-type horrors get on the rig and start wreaking havoc and all that. So I've heard good things about that. So that's one to check out if you still need some spooky stuff here in November. Also for PS5 and PS4 is Insurgency Sandstorm. This is, I believe, a first-person shooter. Maybe it's got third-person stuff as well, but it's one of those games trying to evoke the feel of SOCOM that I don't know that it does a great job of that, but it's available, so that's at least more than what you can get for SOCOM stuff at this point. That one's to check out, especially if you're not checking out Call of Duty or Battlefield right now. So there's that. For PS5 and PS4, Thank Goodness You're Here. That is a very much a comedy adventure game where you're kind of this little dude in this weird town in Britain that is going around and trying to help people with their problems, often solving them in bizarre and unexpected ways. I know there's one early on that you're trying to help with this like beer tap, and you just drink down and just go swimming through the piping or whatever. And doing a lot of fun, nonsensical, funny things. So yeah, very much one of the better comedy games of the past few years. There's that. For PS5, there's the Talos Principle 2, the new iteration of the kind of Portal-like that's the team behind here with the Crow Team, the makers of Serious Sam, kind of making something very much unlike that, where it's a lot of puzzles as you're discovering the nature of your existence and the world around you and all that. And so, yeah, they made more of that, and I've heard good things about that, so I might have to check this one out. Let's see. Also for PS4 and PS5, Monster Jam Showdown. If you just need a monster truck game, this seems like as good of one as you're going to get for the time being. I believe these are all mostly fine. Nothing really amazing about them, but can be a solid time for that. And then for PS5 and PS4, MotoGP 25. If you need a new MotoGP game for racing motorcycles, this one you can check out. And then for premium, there's Tomb Raider Anniversary for the PS5 and PS4, the PS2 remake of the original Tomb Raider game. Is finally available on the PS Plus, so you can check that out. And yeah, see a version of that that looks better than the original game. I don't know how much it compares to the collection, the recent collection, but I'm sure it holds up pretty well for that. So yeah, there's your lineup and some pretty neat stuff there.
So, like, yeah, obviously GTA 5, if you've not played GTA 5 yet at this point, you know, there's your chance. Go ahead. It's right there. And it is worth playing. At least as far as until, you know, GTA 6 comes out and completely, you know, sucks up all the oxygen in the proverbial room. But, yeah, Pacific Drive is definitely a good one. That one is genuinely is a lot of fun, but it is like very much, there is a strong amount of like, you know, having to get materials and stuff so that you can construct, parts to replace for the car, because the car is, you know, it's like, it's an old station wagon and it's not very, It for the stuff that you're going to be doing in that game, it is not a very durable automobile. And like, as the game does go on, you do come across things where you can upgrade and it can, you know, endure a bit more punishment, but pretty much you have to expect that after you finish any particular mission, you've got to immediately get back to the garage and start fixing it up, because it will be pretty much in pieces by the time you get back there. It is, there are like parts about that game that are very like unsettling though, especially the mannequins, which are like these, exactly what it sounds like. They're these mannequins that will like show up, in like the middle of the road and whatever. And they'll be like in like these weird formations, and they'll be, like they're like the stone angels from Doctor Who, where if you look away from them and look back, they'll like slowly move towards you when you're not looking at them, and if you make contact with them, they explode. So, you know, that's also a problem. But yeah, it's genuinely a fun game. Still Wakes the Deep, I have not played that one, but I definitely want to give it a shot. I've heard good things about it. Yeah, it got a fairly solid lineup this time.
Yeah, it's a really good lineup, as Brandon said. Grand Theft Auto V, that game has been on and off both PS Plus and Game Pass, and you know, it's kind of weird that, you know, it's, the game sells well, gangbusters. So honestly, if you don't even have it, like it's just weird at this point, because this game already transcends three generations.
Yeah.
But yeah, Pacific Drive is one I never heard of, and one I definitely have my interest in. I don't know if I'll ever have time to play it, but it does sound interesting. I do know about Still Wakes the Deep, but that one is definitely not in my wheelhouse. I did play through Thank Goodness You're Here. I am one of the people that just did not care for the comedy, but if you have the service, you know, this is definitely something that's fun to not spend money on. And then the Talos Principle 2 is another one that definitely has my eye, although I'm also dumb when it comes to these kinds of games. So that's about it.
Yeah. So yeah, let's get to the next bit of news. And as I mentioned, Rockstar is doing a new upgrade for Red Dead Redemption. So if you own the game on PS4, the Switch, or I guess the backwards compatible Xbox 360 release on the Xbox Series X and S, you can get an upgrade, the new version for free. And yeah, as I said, the PS5 and PS4 versions will be on PS Plus game catalog, with the PS4 version available now, PS5 when it launches on December 2nd. So yeah, and there are also mobile versions, iOS and Android versions, that'll be on the Netflix app. So if you want to access those there, you can check it out through Netflix for that. So yeah, people will be able to check it out and get at least a little bit of a nicer version of that on their newer consoles.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
And that is, like, it's still, that game does still hold up, so absolutely worth playing.
Is this like a full-on remaster, or is it just, like, made better resolution and stuff?
The PS4, Xbox, or the PS4 and Switch versions were the remasters. It's just free upgrades for the new consoles.
Okay.
So it'll be able to do 4K, 60, and all that stuff. HDR mouse controls on the Switch too, and all that. So, that's neat.
Oh yeah,
people are just waiting for the sequel to get an upgrade at some point. But yeah, let's see here. We got a date for Pokemon Pokopia, which is March 5th. Not really too much of a surprise that that's early next year. This also seems to be a game key card release, so people that care about that will have to figure out something else to do if they wanted to check it out. So yeah, that'll be a $70 game, which definitely seems a lot for the kind of game that this seems to be, but maybe they'll have enough content in it. I don't know, but yeah, that'll be a challenging product to get to sell very much at that price and all that. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Let's see. We also have some news that Trails in the Sky second chapter will be out by September 2026. As they've said here in their fiscal year reporting, basically it'll be out by that point. Which, yeah, they've already got the engine and all that good to go. Adapting the second chapter for that release seems like it shouldn't be that hard.
Yeah, it shouldn't be that hard. The main thing is that game is almost double the first game as far as length goes. So there will definitely be some things to be wary of in regards to travel. Because when I played the PSP version, that's actually done on two UMDs, I believe. So it'll be interesting seeing how they put it all together. Granted, I've never played the Steam versions that actually merged them well. So, yeah. But yeah, that's also the best game in the series. So that's good news.
Yeah. And speaking of 2026, Mixtape has been delayed again to be a 2026 release. This is the game that was shown off at the Xbox Showcase in 2024. It was supposed to be out this year from developer Beethoven and Dinosaur, the makers of The Artful Escape, which was kind of their new game about these teenagers who end up having some kind of magical powers as they are dealing with music stuff, whatever's all the kind of weird stuff that is going on there. So yeah, that looks cool, and yeah, don't need to have them rush it. They seem like they are not too far off, but they just need to keep working on it, and we'll have it ready sometime next year.
So yeah, it's a real bummer to me. This was actually my favorite game at Summer Game Fest this year. But yeah, nothing wrong with the delay. It also means that the people working on it are going to be paid a little more, so that's fine. I just hope that when it does come out, it, you know, they end up meeting expectations, especially with all the licenses that they have.
Yeah. So yeah, that'll be out at some point next year, probably in the first half of next year. So wish them luck. Then we finally got not a direct for Metroid Prime 4 Beyond, but this overview trailer.
Yeah.
That kind of shows a good bit of the game off.
Yeah.
Especially a fun part where they're like, and the core abilities you start with is jump, the morph ball. Like, okay, yeah. This, like, I would hope by the fourth one of these that she can jump. But yeah, previews also came out like
this. But can she crawl?
She doesn't need to crawl. She can roll in the ball.
I know. That's the joke.
Don't need to even worry about getting an upgrade for that.
Yep.
But yeah, previews have been coming out and seems to indicate that the Galactic Federation being a big part of the story here is that you seem like you're dealing with one of their dudes in each of the main areas. And depending on your tolerance for sidekick stuff, as far as them talking to you and all that, that might affect your ability to enjoy this game. Maybe in the same way that Metroid Other M was, though it doesn't seem like there's as much of them kind of bossing Samus around and like withholding upgrades from her for their purposes. But I did like them saying, you know, talking about Samus's arch rival Silex, which unless you played every single Metroid game, you probably have no clue who that is.
Yeah.
Because that is a character from the DS Hunters game, as well as the the Federation Force game, the Rocket League style game.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, if you didn't play either of those, you have no clue who this character is as they try to build him up as some big important character and all that. But yeah, Samus has awoken on this weird planet that has the desert area that kind of separates these different locales. I think you can get some fast travel to go between them, but you have to do a decent bit in the desert on the Viola, a motorcycle that's, you know, is definitely not influenced by Akira's bike, as you can do kind of that same kind of slide, Akira slide on there. Take out enemies, but you can also use it in kind of more open-ish areas, even in some of the other locales, and all that. So yeah, looks like it could be pretty cool. We'll see, but yeah, it's also got some elements to have people worry about it, where it's
gonna go
if these sidekicks are going to be as annoying as people fear, where these psychic abilities are going to be an interesting addition or just more busy work. But everything else seems pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I am on media blackout for this game. So, you know, aside from what I heard here and what I've read on Twitter, I don't know a whole lot. I did hear about the annoying sidekick, but like when I think about it, looking back at Super Mario Brothers Wonder, for example, I love the talking flower. If this sidekick has like any sort of the same comedic timing, it can definitely, you know, earn me right on there. But I will say, you know, as far as Silex goes, like he's been around since Metroid Prime 3. I actually think Metroid Prime Hunters predates it. So the thing is, Silex has been around in every Metroid Prime game, including the bad ones, yes. But at the same time, it's like, you know, sure, a lot of what makes Metroid is just being isolated on these planets. But at the same time, it's like, she's on missions. It's not like she's not taking orders. So, you know, we kind of have to delve into that territory unless you just want to tell the same story over and over. And that's not always the best way to go about it, especially when you consider Star Fox, because they've remade the same game 4 times. And I'm like, okay, we're done with the story. Let's move on. And the series is dead. So, you know, I'm glad that Metroid Prime 4 has like some sort of continuity going on. Do I know what's going to happen aside from that? I don't know. And admittedly, I did not finish Prime 3. But at the same time, like, I'm still looking forward to jumping in.
There's good stuff to look forward to for that game. So we'll see how that goes. Then, yeah, we got this. NCSoft announced their new partnership with Sony for the Horizon Steel Frontiers game. which is an MMO set in the Horizon universe that is a mobile and PC game. And it's primarily a mobile game in the, because, you know, NCSoft is a Korean company that kind of focused first on that kind of stuff. And it's available on PC via Purple, which is the platform that NCSoft has for their PC stuff. So it's not really even available on Steam or anything. Though you might be able to load it into Steam. I'm not sure, but yeah. It's a little weird thing, but yeah, seems to have some elements of things like Monster Hunter, and, you know, which is always kind of a thing in the Horizon games.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely looks like a game that was not made by Guerrilla, as it's just enough of an art style change, especially because you can customize the look of your human in this, and you can kind of do the dumb Gamergate thing of making your character super pretty with makeup and all that. It's like they claim, like, oh, this would be a better look for Aloy and all that. And it's like, no, you're just afraid of what women look like without makeup. So yeah, looks neat. It'll be out, I want to say next year, maybe. No date yet, but I'd imagine it'll probably be out next year or so. But yeah, they got a trailer there for you to check out and all that. But yeah, there you go.
Yeah, when I heard about this, I did not know it was available on PC. That being said, it's kind of changed my tune a little bit. And my tune was like, I don't know who this game is for. It doesn't look like it is a meaningful story in the universe, so I don't know why you'd want to, like, jump into it. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I love Horizon. Horizon is a fantastic series. But if it's, like, not about Aloy, like, I'm not saying I don't care, but I want to know how it's actually impactful. Because there is some sort of value to this IP. Like, if there was a TV show, I'd be into it. But a mobile game, and, like, we know what these are for. They're eventually to be a gacha thing. But as an MMO, I'm just not sure how this would appeal to people who got into the series in the first place. And if they're not going for that audience, I don't really see what the point is. But, well, you know, I guess more Horizon can't be a bad thing, but this will just probably just disappear. I don't know.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is taking place in a different area called the Deadlands, which is Arizona and New Mexico, up in the south. A good bit. And yeah, kind of be a more multiplayer focused game for all that. So team up with people and whatnot to take down robot dinosaurs and such. So yeah, that looks neat. But yeah, mobile focus, because it's, you know, made for like the Asian market first and foremost. So we'll have to see how that ends up turning out. But yeah, speaking of Korean companies, Krafton has finally gotten the full publishing rights for Hi-Fi Rush transferred to them. Yeah, so they, let's see, digital storefronts will gradually be updated to reflect Krafton as the publisher. In-game elements reflecting these changes will be updated through a patch scheduled for December 4th. So the PS5, Xbox, Steam, Epic Games Store and Microsoft Store versions should be getting updated here in the next few weeks to reflect these changes. So yeah, nothing else really going to change here for any of that. Your save stuff will work just fine. Unless the update works something, nothing should really change about your access to the game. So there you go. Just some updates on that stuff, so you don't see the Microsoft branding on that anymore. Which is good.
Yeah. And they can actually, you know, treat that franchise the way it deserves to be treated, unlike what Microsoft did.
At least for now. Because I did see Krafton trying to become an AI-first publisher, so
who knows
where that shit's gonna go. But yeah, back to More Nintendo news. They put out their first trailer for the Super Mario Galaxy movie, which definitely has a lot of Galaxy stuff to it.
Yep.
Though also kind of seems to feature an area from Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
That big desert area with the upside down pyramid.
Yep.
On it. And Bowser Jr. being the big bad. So a little bit of not about Sunshine, because he's not being invisible. He's just like mm-hmm. super metallic looking character here.
Yep.
And all that. But yeah, looks pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be out in April. So not too far away for that.
Mm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Yep. And like, yeah, they also had like some of the Super Mario Sunshine in there as well through Bowser Jr.
Yeah.
With, you know, the paintbrush and the mask and everything. But yeah, it looks good.
Yeah. They didn't really address any of the breathing in space stuff. As they're zooming through the star teleport things.
Mm. Well, to be fair, the games like don't do anything about that either. So
yeah. In fact, like the games only care about breathing when you actually go into the underwater stages again. So
yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, like out of what we've seen so far, I'm excited. You know, I joyfully enjoyed the first one, and I'm looking forward to this one. What I do find interesting is, you know, the actor for Bowser Jr., that guy from Happy Gilmore 2 and what's it called? Oppenheimer. So mm-hmm. he does have a range. I do think it's interesting that Bowser Jr. has, like, you know, he's more of a teenager here as opposed to him being like an annoying little kid in all the games. So I'm wondering if this ends up with him being a more menacing character. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's like, you know, Brie Larson is a hardcore Nintendo fan, so it's cool getting to see her be Rosalina, because Rosalina is a powerhouse, but at the end of the mm-hmm. day, it's like that game has also been about saving her. So it'll be interesting seeing that dynamic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't really see Rosalina doing much in any of the game stuff, especially compared to what she does in this trailer, which is fuck up a big robot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, she just reads stories.
Yeah.
And, like, stands around. So that's good to see. We did get some really big news as Valve announced their next set of hardware. The inventive titles of the Steam Machine, the Steam Controller, and the Steam Frame. Mm. The Steam Machine is their new sort of easier to access PC machines that they describe here as having 6 times the horsepower of the Steam Deck. It is like a little 6-inch cube here with a number of ports on it. Apparently you can replace the faceplate on the front of it. It's like a lot of faceplates on, you know, PC desktops that can pop off. It runs on SteamOS, much like the Steam Deck, which I hope they put a lot more work into it, because you can kind of tolerate the random bugs and such on the Steam Deck to a degree, but having that on your TV, that stuff will be tolerated much less, especially if they don't get the Steam storefront improved, because it's right now, I would say, probably the worst storefront on any of these consoles or handhelds. Because if you've used it on a Steam Deck, it is really not well suited for, you know, D-pad, analog stick, button controls. You can't access certain parts of the Steam storefront. Even things like the wish list are really hard to navigate in any normal way. And yeah, they're going to be expanding their verified program for the Steam Machine itself as well. It has a little LED strip to denotes when it's downloading updates and such. I'm guessing you can customize it. You can do quite a bit on this, much like the Steam Deck. Mm-hmm. It'll have 2 storage sizes in default 512 gigabytes or 2 terabytes. You can expand that further with micro SDs or an SSD internally, much like you can with the Steam Deck if you open it up a bit. This thing seems like a pretty solid box for playing most games. There will definitely be ones that will be more challenging.
Oh, yeah.
To run on there, you know, your Battlefields and all that. Especially if it's on Linux and SteamOS, that'll probably have some issues with any of the games that require the sort of Windows-focused cheat software. Your Destinies, your Fortnites, your Battlefields and all that. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, it looks interesting. They don't have any prices on this stuff yet. They're going to announce that probably sometime before you can pre-order it next year. They're all planned for early 2026. The Steam controller is essentially what if we took all the inputs from the Steam Deck and put it on a controller, which means it looks pretty weird because it's got the, it's got kind of a PlayStation DualShock style setup with the sticks in the middle of it, with the touch pads right below the sticks, and an extra button there. I believe on the back side it has extra buttons that can be remapped, much like on the Steam Deck. With all that, they apparently have haptic feedback on this controller, so it'll be like, you know, the DualSense and the Joy-Cons for some games. So yeah, that looks like it could be all right. I don't know. I'm not like the most annoying thing in Steam Deck games is when you're using the right stick to control things and brush up against the touchpad, and it thinks that is also a right stick thing and causes some chaos. So some games I have to go and edit the controls and turn off the touchpad being used like that. And this seems very similar of a potential issue because the touch pads are right below the each of the sticks. So if you're, you know, pushing them down, you may end up rubbing against that stuff to do other things with it. So yeah, there's that. Also no price. They're claiming a decent battery life on this thing. We'll see. You can also sync, you know, PS5 and Xbox and Switch controllers to it, much like you can on Steam currently and the Steam Deck. And the Steam Frame is their VR system. They call it a streaming first wireless VR headset with controllers that can handle your whole Steam library. It supports standalone play too. Which seems like it should be all right. It has a wireless adapter and dual radios, one for audio and visual stuff, the other one for Wi-Fi stuff, so that you're not competing for bandwidth, which seems smart. And yeah, the everything else seems pretty standard stuff for that. So yeah, it looks neat. So if you want to do your Steam VR stuff, that seems like this will also work with Android games, to a degree. Not exactly sure what that particularly means for all that, but yeah, they are making a big deal of that. But yeah, looks neat. Again, no prices on any of this, so we'll find out probably closer to when they're putting the stuff up for pre-order. But yeah, could be neat for their additional offerings. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, my use case is going to be tied to price point. Like, to be honest, whenever I play Steam games, it's not even for me. It's for our own content. And I just try to, like, not play on PCs whenever possible. And when I do, it's on my Steam Deck. And for the most part, I have enjoyed games on my Steam Deck. It's just not when it's optimized for it where we have problems. And if this can, like, solve that issue, great. But at the same time, like, if it's at a price point that doesn't make sense to me, then I'll wait. And, you know, the reality of the situation is, aside from the Steam Deck itself, Steam hasn't had like the best luck when it comes to any of their hardware. So it's definitely a wait and see approach for me.
Yeah. Also, people are basically losing their damn minds over the fact that, Valve is putting out, a new peripheral, so that means Half-Life 3 must be around the corner, which is what happens with basically every new thing that they put out. So
Yeah.
that's not surprising.
Yeah. I will look forward to, if the Steam controller doesn't take off, to buy it when it's on sale for $5 as they're clearancing it out, like I did the previous one, which I mainly use at this point for my trucking games, because it's not great to play for most things, because it just has these two big discs on it that you move your thumbs across, that do not replace analog sticks or any sort of camera control or anything. So yeah, that's kind of the thing there. But yeah, we'll hopefully have some more information on that when they're probably getting close to being pre-orderable. I assume much like the Steam Deck, they'll mainly be only pre-orderable in the Steam store itself. So yeah, we'll have to find out. So whenever that is, probably in a few months. But yeah, let's get to our last few bits of industry news. The IWGB Union, the Independent Workers Union of Great Britain, has filed claims for filed formal legal claims against Rockstar Games over its union busting accusations. As Rockstar last week claimed the workers were fired for leaking confidential information, and that the dismissals were not related to union activities. They've had protests outside the offices of Rockstar North and Take-Two Interactive in London and Edinburgh. Now, the claim of Rockstar has declined to meet with the union. They believe these dismissals amount to victimization and collective dismissal linked to trade union activity. We're representing employees who were dismissed by Rockstar Games in circumstances that we believe amount to victimization and collective dismissal linked to trade union activity. By representation and attempts to meet with Rockstar to resolve the matter through negotiations, Rockstar have declined and persisted to terminate members of the union in a manner that is unacceptable and unlawful. Accordingly, we have now issued formal legal claims against Rockstar on behalf of the claimants. Our members allege that Rockstar's conduct constitutes trade union victimization and blacklisting. So yeah, we'll have to see where this goes. Yeah, it's been a thing that has not quieted down for them. Even people working at Rockstar were protesting that they wanted their colleagues returned back to their positions. So yeah, not really going to be a quiet issue for them. So yeah, anything to add, Brandon?
No, not really. Just, this isn't really going to go away. This is going to be a cloud over Rockstar probably for a good while yet. And I wouldn't be surprised if people bring it back up when GTA 6 finally does release next year. And like I mean, it's well known at this point that Rockstar, especially Rockstar North, is infamous for the amount of crunch that they impose on their developers. And it was gonna break eventually. Like this was inevitable, and it's something that Rockstar themselves could have solved a long time ago, but here we are.
So yeah, we'll have to see what further developments happen in this case. But they're not the only company having some issues this week, as we saw this interesting and kind of surprising news of Ubisoft kind of at the last second delaying the fiscal year results they were about to publish and halting trading of their shares. With no reason provided. But yeah, they said they would inform the markets of the date on which trading will restart, but published a delayed financial report in the coming days. Seems like they have something going on here. Maybe they're going to be selling off to more of Tencent, more of their company to Tencent or something. Because, yeah, you don't really do any of this without something big going on here. And, yeah, they mentioned here their shares have plummeted 95% in the past 5 years.
Yeah.
And even in the past year, they've gone down 50%. So they have not done on the markets. They have not really put out much to give people confidence in what their plan is.
No.
For the time being.
Yeah. Like Ubisoft really has kind of become like the byword for companies that, you know, like let me rephrase that. Ubisoft has sort of become the Ur example for all of the sins of a AAA game publisher, with, you know, the excessive DLC and the, you know, the loot boxes and the pay to win shit, and just, and, you know, also the fact that a lot of their franchises just became like a cookie cutter thing of each other. So, you know, I'm really not surprised that, you know, they haven't done that well fiscally over the last few years.
Yeah, it's tough to see. I mean, when we're talking about, like, the, you know, the PS3, PS4 era, like, they were cooking. You know, every Assassin's Creed was a banger, and eventually it redefined itself to be something new. And, you know, luckily for them, Assassin's Creed Shadows ended up being a good game, and it actually met their expectations. But aside from that, what have they released since then, right? There's of course, the Prince of Persia Lost Crown, which was awesome critically, but it did not meet their expectations, and it's just tough. Like, there just hasn't been the output to really make anything worth it. And honestly, like, you know, yeah, it'll definitely be better for their shareholders, but, you know, a sale, unfortunately, at this time is the right direction. Unfortunately, that's not a good thing for their employees. It's not a good thing for their creative teams. I just talked about Prince of Persia. That studio is gone. And yeah, like, we don't know what's coming from them. They can go ahead and talk about the Prince of Persia remake and Beyond Good and Evil 2 all they want, but at the end of the day, unless we see it, it's just vaporware at this point. And yeah, it's really unfortunate. And, you know, like y'all said, like, this kind of thing does not happen with the stockholder meetings without, you know, maybe a big transaction happening. And yeah, like, it is what it is there. And, you know, hopefully, hopefully the people there can keep their jobs, but it's definitely a rough situation. And not a lot of people who I personally know in Ubisoft are recommending people to apply for jobs there. So it's just nothing but fear going on. And that's just a case of the industry right now. It's not just them.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll have to see. I assume this week we'll find out more of what's going on. But yeah, we'll have to just wait and see how that goes. So there's that, and we'll go into the Joker news of the week, as Eurogamer reviewed Ark Raiders and gave it a 2 out of 5, primarily through a good bit of the writing about the AI dialogue generation stuff that is using voice work done by voice actors that were paid, but using AI to allow them to adapt it to, you know, the, I guess, calling out various items and places and such that are around the map, that I guess they don't want to pay for voice work specific to all of those things. And these are voice generation AI stuff that the company that makes it has settled a lawsuit about them stealing a bunch of voice data to build their tools. So that's kind of core to the tools that have been used there. But kind of the review is basically about how the use of AI kind of soured their experience of the game that is otherwise good, and just kind of makes it a more hollow experience, and has caused the internet to, you know, blow up of people that don't understand how reviews work anymore. That, you know, how Derry has opinions on things the game's doing in the review, and have that affect his view of the game, kind of stuff. And King Joker, in response to this, is one Tim Sweeney of Epic, who responded to the post on X about their review, where he framed it as a political review. Political opinions should go into op-ed, folks. And it's like, that's what a review is.
Yeah.
That's, you're an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
At the very core of what he's saying here. And yeah, kind of just keeps going on. He was asked by somebody if dislike of AI should be considered political. He says, yes. This technology increases human productivity in some areas by integer multiples, and views on whether this is a net good and should be rewarded or bad and should be fought against are speculative and generally distributed along political lines, which is like that. I don't think you even set a point here. You're just saying gibberish and trying to push stats that don't really exist on this stuff yet. Because the things I've seen have been like, it's negligible at best for improving productivity stuff, but also there's plenty of people that are against AI across the political spectrum. It's not a Democrat, Republican thing or anything. But he also adds here, since the author states the pessimistic case, I'll put the optimistic one here. Game developers compete to build the best games in order to attract gamers. Tech increases productivity. Competition leads to building better games rather than employing fewer people. It's like, I guess. But it's also like, again, the notion that AI is improving productivity on this stuff is not well documented here. So he's just running off of a false premise here. On the topic of AI voice generation, says here, I think there's an even bigger opportunity for in-game voice and voice actors. Instead of games having a few dozen or hundred lines of pre-recorded dialogue, how about infinite, context-sensitive, personality-reflecting dialogue based on and tuned by human voice actors? And it's like, nobody wants NPCs in their games talking forever about nothing.
Right.
Like, you want them to give you the interesting information that you need, and then to either stop talking or just repeat it so you don't have an opportunity of missing stuff. And he's like, I've thought about this since the 90s and all this. And writing more dynamically composed text adventure games in the 80s.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like, sure, but also those games give you the information you need. If they went on tangents and shit, then you'd be fucking annoyed at those games. So yeah, kind of this review was kind of the biggest thing in the writing side of the games industry for the past week or so. And it's caused a lot of people to reveal if they're, you know, AI defenders or whatever. And it's like this game is doing sort of like the finals, which is the dev's previous game, which is using AI generated voice stuff. Which that was one of the things that people were annoyed about with the finals, because it was the announcer stuff in the multiplayer game. Here it's more either like robotic NPC voices who don't add anything to the game from what I've read about, or just this ping stuff, which is at least a more useful thing, but also it's ping thing. You don't need voices tied to that really. The notion of like it being specific to the items or places you're pointing at, and it's like, I guess, but it could also just point a cursor on the screen and be like, hey, we're going over here, kind of thing. This is a game that's done very well in spite of the AI stuff, but also has a vocal pushback of people that want it to not become a default thing used by developers. Which then you get Call of Duty coming out this past week that just has the sloppiest AI art generation bullshit for like the banners and such you can unlock.
Yeah.
Specifically use that stupid Studio Ghibli filter.
Yeah.
That everybody hates.
Yeah.
But the devs use it, and you can look closer, notice like extra fingers and all that shit in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, great job, guys. Couldn't have a, you know, artist design all this stuff for people. I just generate it and be like, oh, we just did it on the whim.
Mm.
All that. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I have never played Arc Raiders, but I'm not going to be blind and say nobody cares, because obviously, like, this is one of the most popular games in the medium right now, and, you know, for good reasons. Like a lot of people say it plays well. But yeah, as far as AI goes, especially with dialogue, again, like, this game has no single-player campaign. The dialogue should not matter. The only dialogue that should matter is the ones that you're saying to your teammates or opponents, whatever it may be. So, yeah, just turn that off. And then as far as the political undertones, like, yeah, you're right. Reviews are op-ed, so I don't know what the hell he's complaining about here. And the other thing is that games media does not have the same power it used to have in the first place. You know, a lot of us are gone, whether it be because they aren't paid enough or aren't paid at all, or just don't like the way that they've been treated, or when it comes to the growth of podcasts and influencers, like, yeah, we don't have the same voice we once had. But at the same time, like, it does matter. At the end of the day, it's like, reviews are still going to be marketing, and when the reviews are bad, yeah, they're going to try to like avoid them as soon as possible. But Arc Raiders reviews are good. Yeah, Eurogamer is just one outlet out of many. So honestly, like, to me, this should mostly be a non-story, but because it's AI, like, we're here because we're here. And, you know, I don't support it in any way. And then as far as the political undertones go, it's like, you know, at the end of the day, when it comes to reviews anyway, I would rather just keep it about the game and whether the game is good or bad. But at the same time, I am all about imploring writers to go ahead and find their own voice and communicate about it how they will, because it's all unique. And at the end of the day, the best writers are gonna have their opinions said in better ways. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, there's places for plenty of viewpoints in reviews. If there were more opportunities to review games multiple times, I would definitely recommend, you know, having people that are familiar with the genre of the franchise you're covering, people that are new to it, because there's all sorts of viewpoints that could be covered, but because you generally get one review, you just put somebody on that's capable of handling what's, you know, what the game is, or whatever they're covering, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's all plenty of room for critique into, you know, story, the tech being used, all that kind of stuff, and how that affects the product as a whole, which is, you know, a huge part of games at this point. As we delve into a lot of these tools that are, you know, sometimes flimsy at best and may or may not actually improve without, you know, updates or whatever. We've seen, you know, Nintendo updating their games because they ran like shit on the Switch 1. So they run better on the Switch 2. And it's like, that doesn't invalidate the people that, you know, point out how shitty they ran on the Switch 1 and docked points or whatever for that. You know, it's like all part of the package that you're reviewing, depending on how you want to, you know, cover things for it. So, yeah. There you go on that. We got one more story here. The Indie Game Awards for 2025 announced all of their nominees. That'll be taking place on December 18th. This is run by, I forget what they call it here, the 6-1 Indie. They're doing this, and not going to go through all the awards, but they do have some interesting things here. I think it's the second year doing this. Yeah, for their overall game of the year, they have an interesting inclusion of Clair Obscur Expedition 33 from Sandfall Interactive, which maybe in a sense of the word indie game, you might be like, yeah, that kind of fits. I would say maybe for me it doesn't in terms of the approach, and I ended up looking up the publisher which is Kepler Interactive, who is, let me see here. Yeah, they are sort of a company founded as like a collaboration between a number of indie developers. But then, yeah, at a certain point, they raised a bunch of money from NetEase to fund their operations. And I feel like at a certain point, when you're getting like this $120 million in funding, that you start to be less of an indie publisher kind of thing, where the things you're publishing are indies. So there's been debate about that kind of thing. And they've also posted about all the discussions they've had for it and all that. And so, yeah, there's certainly still more to go that people can, you know, feel about that. But it ends up making it onto this list, but it's also a stacked list of games with, like, Hades 2, Hollow Knight Silksong, Consume Me's on here, Citizen Sleeper 2, Blueprints, Absalom, Keep Driving, Pipistrello and the Cursed Yo-Yo, and let's see what else is on here, and Roger. So yeah, and they got, you know, there's a Women-Led Indie Game Award, with some really interesting games on there, you know, Visual Design, Southeast Asian Indie Game Award, with a bunch of interesting stuff in there, South African Indie Game Award, Solo Development Award, which this list changed because they had Anton Blast on here from Summit Sphere, who contacted them to be like, we're not actually a solo developer kind of thing. So they had their game changed out for a game called Tall Trails from a different developer. So there's that, you know, narrative music, Latin American Indie Award. I do like that they have a bunch of indie awards devoted to different regions. Yeah, as well as Black Voices in Gaming Award, ANZ Indie Gaming Award, which I believe is Australia and New Zealand. So yeah, kind of highlighting games from different regions that you often don't get in these kind of award shows. So yeah, that looks neat. And yeah, if you need games to check out, if you weren't sure what came out this year that is interesting, there's a lot of them here to check out. And a lot of really good games, so yeah, there you go for that. But yeah, let's get to the PlayStation State of Play. Japan was what they called it.
Yep.
Which had a bunch of news on here, a lot of just dates and such. So we had Inkon Beanie, the Japanese 7-Eleven simulator kind of game, that is going to be out in April. So that'll be cool. A lot of these are coming out next year. We got Coffee Talk Tokyo that is going to be out March 5th.
Yep.
So you can check that one out. Broken Lore Unfollow is out January 16th. This is like a horror series that has been going. They announced their next game, Ascend, is going to be coming out in the summer. Let's see. Fatal Frame 2 Crimson Butterfly Remake will be out March 12th. Dynasty Warriors Origins DLC Visions of Four Heroes will be out January 22nd. Gran Turismo 7 will have the Power Pack DLC coming out December 4th alongside the Spec 3 updates they are planning as well. And this is a paid expansion that will be adding a bunch of stuff to it. 50 new races across six distinctive themes, including 24-hour endurance events. You can do full race season with the need to practice and qualify for the races. And you can face off against the new version of Gran Turismo Sophie AI 3.0. And as well as this includes some credits so that you can buy new vehicles, I guess, and such for the new stuff that's in this game. So, yeah, that looks cool. Especially bringing back some of the types of races that people have liked in the previous games, the endurance stuff that people have been wanting in this game.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Let's see. Motion Rec is a neat looking indie game that's coming out this spring. It's like a recording puzzle action game where you're recording your movements to replay as you're going around these stages, so that looks really neat. Let's see, we got Wandering Sword, which is, I believe, a Chinese RPG in the vein of, you know, your classic Japanese RPGs. Yeah, I think it's been on Steam for a while, but it's finally coming to PS5 May 28th, and will be coming to Switch and Switch 2 later next year. That looks neat. Let's see. It's been on Steam for about 2 years now. Let's see. We got No Sleep for Kaname Date from AI The Somnium Files, which was a Switch launch exclusive. It's finally coming to PlayStation and Xbox.
Yep.
On February 26th.
Mm.
You can check that out there. Tokyo Extreme Racers, the return for that, is coming to PS5 February 26th. Because that's been, I think, on Steam and maybe Xbox exclusive. I forget.
Mm.
Might just be Steam exclusive for a bit. So, yeah, there's that. Let's see. Yeah, there's DLC for all the Bandai Namco stuff. Once Upon a Katamari is getting some new DLC at some point. Pac-Man World 2 Repack is getting its Sonic the Hedgehog DLC is out now. You can check that out. Digimon Story Time Strangers first DLC is coming out this winter.
Mm-hmm.
And Super Robot Wars Y is getting DLC featuring the Big O and Kamen Riders on November 21st. So they're adding more mechs to that. Including the Big O, which is one of those anime that's kind of has disappeared a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if there's an available version of that available on anything at the moment. It was big on like Adult Swim, but I think it's maybe sunken into licensing hell at some point. But maybe Bandai Namco is doing something with that now.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
But yeah, there you go on that. Let's see, Monster Hunter Wilds 4, or Monster Wilds Title 4 updates is happening on the 16th of December. We're adding a new monster and some new stuff there. Sonic Racing Cross Worlds getting some DLC on November 20th, which includes, yeah, the SpongeBob stuff, SpongeBob Squares Pants and Patrick Starr's playable characters, Paddy Wagon Vehicle, Bikini Bottom Course, and some of that stuff. They're also now some of the free stuff they got coming. So adding Knights, the character, and a vehicle for him on December. January's getting Super Monkey Ball with II as a playable character. A vehicle for that. And Tangle and Whisper from the Sonic the Hedgehog comic book.
Yep.
From February will be available.
Which I think is like the first time they've had one of the characters from the comics actually show up in a Sonic game since Sonic Spinball, and not as just like a brief Easter egg.
Yeah, which is like, if you're gonna do that in a game, I guess this is the one to do it. So yeah, there you go for that. There's an interesting game called Nevergrave, The Witch and the Curse, which is coming to everything on March 5th. This is a roguelike action game. We are playing as like a witch with a floating sword that goes around and attacks people with it. This is the first game I think that Pocket Pair is publishing with their stuff. So yeah, that looks pretty interesting. If you want your more gothic looking environments, also had a bit of Hollow Knight look to the environments and all that. I wouldn't be surprised if it was influenced by that. Then we got a new BlazBlue Entropy Effect X, which is not a fighting game but an action game. I think it's been out on Steam for a couple years now. So they're finally bringing it to consoles. PS5, Xbox, and Switch February 12th. So not too far away for that. And that looks neat. A lot of good 2D art and all this. And adds more, mm-hmm. I guess, I assume, to the lore of the BlazBlue universe. You need that. Otherwise, it's just pretty looking action game. That game, Damon and Baby, that got announced a while ago. That is an Arc System Works game. Will be out early next year. On PlayStation, Switch, and Xbox, or no, Switch and PC. Which is sort of one of those games that you are playing as like a demon kind of thing. Yeah, the Demon King, Damon, who has a baby that hangs out with him, helps him do, you know, whatever. And so you're kind of going around and doing a bunch of stuff with that. You can also play with a second person if you want. Let's see, Kyoran Machiasm is the new game from NISA or NIS that will be, I guess, getting a Western release. But they, or no, this is the Japanese release, January 29th. I assume this will come over to the West at some point, but doesn't have a date on it yet. But it's full of their kind of art stuff. It seems more like an action RPG kind of thing. To it, from what I saw. Seems like it could also be, say, taking influence from like the Trails games. Because it seems like it's got a bit more action to its combat system here. But yeah, that's one to keep an eye on. Fate Triggers, the new game in the Fate series. I believe this is a free-to-play, or no, the early access version of the multiplayer third-person shooter. Fate Triggers coming to PS5 alongside PC early next year. January is what they seem to be targeting right now. And if you told me they wanted to make a Genshin Impact for Fate, I would believe you. It features a lot of scantily clad anime women. And this with some robots, and I don't know that there's no males as far as I could see here. It's a robot with like a cat on its shoulder. They had Octopath Traveler Zero on here to announce the demo. Was out now. Features about 3 hours of content that'll carry over to the main game. And you can check it out on everything, I think, at this point. PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, Switch 2, and PC. So yeah, that's cool. They showed off a bit more of Marvel Tokkan Fighting Souls. Especially with the second closed beta test happening between December 5th and 7th. You'll be able to check it out some more then. And they're like, we'll add Spider-Man and I think Ghost Rider to that, as well as maybe another stage. Yeah, the X-Mansion will be available for that test. So there's that. Then they finally announced the first DLC for Elden Ring Nightreign, The Forsaken Hollows. It's $15 DLC, so if you want some more content, that's something you can get there. For a game that I think people enjoyed a lot, but also went by the wayside because people played all the content and then moved on. Then Sony had some other news here at the end. They announced a 27-inch gaming monitor that they are going to release at some point. Has a neat little like attachment there that you can plug in your DualSense to charge it directly from the monitor that hangs out right below it. And yeah, there's pairs with their Pulse Elevate wireless speakers, those like desktop speaker looking things they announced, which makes sense with this coming alongside it. Supports 1440p resolution, HDR, up to 120 frames per second. Gameplay, 240 hertz for PC and Mac. 120 hertz for PS5 and PS5 Pro. And looks neat. Seems like it's probably going to be a decent monitor here. All the specs and details they show here seem pretty in line with what else is out there. Just depends if you want one that has PlayStation branding on it. The back side of it is white with the PlayStation logo on it. But that like charging thing for the DualSense controller like swivels up to hide it, so you can roll it back down and all that. So that's something that'll be available sometime next year in the US and Japan. And then they also announced a new digital edition of PS5 for the Japanese market that is 55,000 yen, which is about like $350. That only supports Japanese language as well as Japanese accounts.
Yeah.
Very much like that Switch 2 that is just for Japanese region. It is much cheaper because it doesn't have to worry about any sort of tariff stuff and all that. So, yeah, seems like them kind of being a bit more serious about the Japanese market with this to offer a cheaper option. That kind of goes in line with what the PS5s looked like before or were priced at before the previous increase. Because, yeah, it seems like the current SKU is at almost 73,000 units. And, yeah, this is only 5,000 yen more than the Switch 2 that's exclusive to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So going to make a pricing seem more in line with that and more competitive for that, so that seems like a solid idea. And yeah, that'll be out 21st. Pre-orders are already opened in Japan, but yeah, there you go. That's their state of play with some interesting games there. Anything here that stood out for you, Brandon?
Marvel Token Fighting Souls obviously is like a big one. And I've said it several times before, I'll say it again. One of the things I will give Marvel credit for is for like these sort of Asian developers, they're giving them a good deal of leeway and allowing them to put their own spin on all of these characters as far as their designs are concerned. Like they're still recognizably like, yeah, that's still recognizably Captain America. And that's still recognizably Spider-Man. But, you know, they actually were allowed to sort of put their own spin on their classic designs and made something that looks very unique. So, you know, I think that's just really cool. Let's see. Obviously, no sleep for Konami Date. I want to play that AI Somnian Files game. I'll finally get a chance to do that. Yeah, those Broken Lore games look pretty neat, too. And obviously, Coffee Talk Tokyo is a big one for me because I very much loved the first two Coffee Talk games. And, you know, kind of excited to see where the franchise is going to go from here. But yeah, that's about it.
How about you, Danner?
I want to say, first of all, I want to give a shout out to the host, Yuki Kaji. You know, obviously this is a state of play primarily for Japan, but he is a well-known voice actor, especially if you watch anime. He plays Eren Yeager, Shoto Todoroki in My Hero Academia. He's also Sabito in Demon Slayer. Like, as soon as like I heard his voice, I was like, oh, okay, I know this guy. He's pretty cool. So big ups to Sony for getting him. And yeah, like Brandon, I'm really interested in Coffee Talk Tokyo. And aside from that, there really isn't a whole lot here. I am not a horror guy. So, like, as far as Fatal Frame 2 Crimson Butterfly, that looks amazing. But I know I will not be able to play that one. No Sleep for Konami Date, like, came out on Switch 2 a couple months ago. And, like, that's a code we haven't even used. So I definitely got to like, jump on that one. And, yeah, I am interested in that Digimon Story Time Stranger DLC. Just because like, I enjoyed the game so much, I thought I'd jump in. And then the Sonic Racing Crossroads DLC is always something that makes me jump back in. That's one thing I forgot to say that I've been playing because they finally added Ichiban Kasuga to it. So that's been pretty cool. And yeah, you know, going back to what Brandon talked about in regards to Marvel Token Fighting Souls, that is probably going to be one of my most anticipated games of next year. I hope to actually be a part of the beta test because I'm not traveling during December 5th to 7th, so that looks pretty cool. And yeah, Octopath Traveler Zero looks like a whole lot of fun. Michael Murphy has a pretty cool preview of the game. And yeah, like I didn't play the second one, so I don't know how lost I'll be with Zero, but Zero is also supposed to be a prequel, right? So we'll go from there. But yeah, a lot of cool stuff. The main thing that I got out of this was we finally have some dates on 2026 games. And as we continue to build our calendar, now we finally have a good start with it.
Yeah. So yeah, there's some neat stuff here. That Inconbini is one I'm looking forward to. As well as the GT7 power pack. I might check that out if it's not too expensive. For that. And yeah, that Nevergrave looks pretty nice for what it is. So maybe I'll grab that as well. And yeah, some neat stuff here. So yeah, I think that's going to end up doing it for the show this week. Thank you, yep, Brandon and Danner, for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news, cool, games to talk about as the holiday season rapidly approaches.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the if you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know they should check it out. And select strangers that are not going to go about some AI bullshit rants in their holiday time with family, because it's AI stupid. So yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.
See ya.